We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Verse 15. Garbha Pranita Devakya Rohini Yoga Nidraya Aho Visamsito Garbha Iti para vichukroshu Garbha pranita devakya Rohini yoga nidraya Aho vishramsito garbha Iti para vichukroshu. Garbha pranita devakya Rohini yoga nidraya Aho visramsito garbha Iti para vichukrushu Garbha pranita devakya Rohini yoga nidraya Aho visramsito garbha Iti para vichukrushu. Okay. Word for word. Garbha, when the embryo pranite was carried from the womb, Devakya of Devaki, Rohinim, to the womb of Rohini, Yoganidraya, by the spiritual energy called Yogamaya. Aho, alas, Visramsita is lost. Garbha, the embryo, iti, thus, Pauraha, all the inhabitants of the house, Vichukrushu, lamented. Okay, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When the child of Devaki was attracted and transferred into the womb of Rohini by Yogamaya, Devaki seemed to have a miscarriage. Thus, all the inhabitants of the palace loudly lamented, alas, Devaki has lost her child. Purport. All the inhabitants of the palace includes Kamsa. When everyone lamented, Kamsa joined in compassion, thinking that perhaps because of drugs or some other external means, Devaki had undergone this abortion. The real story of what happened after Yogamaya attracted the child of Devaki into the womb of Rohini in the seventh month of Rohini's pregnancy is described as follows in the Hari Vamsa. At midnight, while Rohini was deeply sleeping, she experienced, as if in a dream, that she had undergone a miscarriage. After some time, when she awoke, she saw that this had indeed happened, and she was in great anxiety. But Yogamaya then informed her, "O auspicious lady, your child is now being replaced. I am attracting a child from the womb of Devaki, and therefore your child will be known as Sankarshan." The word Yoga Nidra is significant. When one is spiritually reconnected through self-realization, one regards his material life as having been like a dream. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, "Yanisha sarva bhutana, tasyam jagarti samyami, yasyam jagrati bhutani, sanisha pasyato munihi." What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled, and the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. The stage of self-realization is called Yoga Nidra. All material activities appear to be a dream when one is spiritually awakened. Thus, Yoga Nidra may be explained to be Yoga Maya. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Giryat Kripatamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gorani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshavarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo 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 Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Goratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I appreciate this opportunity to speak in the presence of so many senior devotees. About this summer, we have a very nice situation where we are expecting appearance of Lord Krishna, his festival Janmashtami, and at the same time we are reading these verses from Srimad Bhagavatam which are describing Krishna's appearance. And this is a very nice opportunity for us to try to understand these past times. We may think that everybody knows about Krishna, and especially here in Dham, everybody is devotee. We are all worshipping Krishna. That is why we live here, and we are everywhere. Everywhere we go, we are reminded that Krishna is the Supreme Person and that we should worship him. and we have this beautiful temple being built just so that we can worship him with even more devotion. But if we would go outside and travel a little bit to other parts of this world, we would find that many people, they have never heard about Krishna, or they have heard, but they don't think that he is the Supreme Person. And because I have a memory when first time I heard about Krishna from some yoga teachers, then this is what in the Western world you usually hear, that some traditional people in India, they would say that Krishna is a supreme person or God, but then he was dancing with other people's wives, so how can he be God? So this is not clear if he's God or if he's some just some hero from the past. And later, by the fortune of meeting the devotees, when we are given, usually in the beginning, when somebody is preached to as a young devotee, he is given a Krishna book. So although in the first canto Srila Prabhupada says that we should not go directly to Krishna's pastimes and we should hear all the nine cantos before the 10th cantos so that we can become purified from material contamination and thus qualified to hear Krishna. Otherwise, we would not understand him and we would think that he is just an ordinary person. But usually when devotees in the West, when they are preached, when they become devotees, they are given Krishna book. And then this is how, this is the first story we hear about Krishna is about his taking birth. And so there is nothing unusual about this, because we have all taken birth, and then it is natural to conclude that Krishna is just like us. But his birth, we can immediately see, it's not exactly like our birth, it's a little bit complicated. And then first what happens is that these six demons are born in the womb of Devaki. They are all killed, so this is already a problematic situation for somebody to understand. Why would, if somebody is God and he's appearing in material world, then why would he make his parents go through all this trouble of being in a prison, chained, and having his older brothers being killed? And the next thing we heard is that Balaram appears, but then he's transferred into the womb of Rohini, who is not in Mathura, she is in Vrindavan, in the house of Nanda Maharaj. So then we are again confused and might be asked this question. So if Rohini is Balaram's eternal mother, or real mother, why was there need for him to appear first in the womb of Devaki and then be transferred during the pregnancy, which is mysterious thing? We don't see things like this in our experience. And then finally, Krishna appears. But then he's immediately also transferred to Vrindavan, where he is merged with Krishna, who has taken birth from the womb of Mother Yashoda, together with his sister. And his sister then is coming from Vrindavan to Mathura. So this is very strange for somebody who is a new devotee and who is just learning about chanting or about Krishna. This is already very unusual, hard to understand and hard to follow, because we are used to reading books where we identify with the hero and all everything that happens to him is similar to what we are used to in our lives. So we cannot, from the beginning, we can see Krishna is not somebody we identify with. He's a special person. And in the Vedic culture, Krishna is a big secret. It is not that everybody is understanding his position. And the Vedic system is arranged that the classified knowledge, the Vedas, they are only taught to Brahmanas. They're not taught to the general mass of people, because it is understood that they will not be able to understand this knowledge. That is why they are given duties to perform, and then there are specific duties for each varna. And executing their duties, they would become purified and qualified, that in next birth they will be, or after many births, they would be given opportunity to learn Vedic knowledge. And this is the whole story of Srimad Bhagavatam. Starts when Parikshit Maharaj, he was cursed to die, so he renounced his kingdom and his material life to hear about Srimad Bhagavatam on the banks of Yamuna. And he was fortunate to meet Shukadev Goswami to transfer this knowledge to him. And in this assembly, there were not mass of people, there were only sages. And these sages, as I understand, were mostly renunciates, because they were eligible to hear. And also on the second occasion, where when Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken in the forest of Naimisharanya, again it was assembly of sages, and these sages were hearing from Suta Goswami. So again, this was not revealed to the general mass of people, and it is tradition that one hears spiritual knowledge from his guru, and only the upper varnas are advised, recommended to have a guru, like Shudras and Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. They are allowed to have a spiritual master or guru. Shudras, it was not required of them, and they were just servants. So through serving upper classes, they were getting purified. And then the spiritual master, he would look at his disciple, and then he would adjust, he would monitor him, so to say, and then he would adjust how much he can understand. That much Guru Maharaj would reveal to him, and according to his level of advancement, he would be given instructions. And if somebody is full of material desires and cannot give them up, if he's very much attached, then he will not be able to understand spiritual knowledge, and he will not be able to understand Krishna. And that is why we hear that Yoga Maya, she is Lord Krishna's potency that is covering living entities. And here we hear that in this world, because they appear together, Yoga Maya and Krishna, then there are two divisions of worshippers, worshippers of Shakti, of Goddess Durga, and worshippers of Krishna, who are after spiritual salvation. While worshippers of material energy, they are after material wealth and commodities. And actually, most of people, when we look how they live their lives, that they are bewildered by this material energy, and we would say that they are after sense gratification. This means that their worship is of the Lord's energy, and they don't so much, they don't care about the Supreme, or they don't care about learning who is the Supreme, or what is his name, what are his activities. They just have desires that need to be fulfilled, and then they perform karma to fulfill those desires. But this is exactly in Bhagavad Gita, the situation where, of course, it was the Leela of the Lord, so that Bhagavad Gita was to be spoken. This is exactly the situation where Arjuna, he was lamenting that as if covered by Maya, because he could not see what is the use of fighting. His reasoning was one of somebody who is a karma kandi, because his reasoning was, what is the use, because I will not enjoy the results. I will not enjoy my relatives and my teachers being killed. So even if I win the kingdom and become emperor, I will not find any pleasure in this. So why would I engage in this war? It doesn't make any sense. And then, on his chariot, Krishna was there as his chariot driver. And then he was explaining him, no, you don't understand. Don't be covered by Maya. You have to see that it is not. The reason for you to fight is not that you would enjoy the results of your work. You give up those results. You become a devotee, and as a devotee, you become engaged in devotional service. And that is how you work, because you are kshatriya, and then this is your duty. So don't be bewildered by Maya. This was explained through all the first six chapters in Bhagavad Gita to get Arjuna out of this concept of material life, material sense gratification, material enjoyment. And in the next six chapters, Bhakti Yoga is described. Krishna is telling Arjuna, this is the biggest secret that I am giving to you, and you will not be able to understand this secret by yourself. That is why I, in your heart, am destroying ignorance and giving you this knowledge. And then in the next six chapters, Jnana Yoga is also described, where it is explained how neither through karma, neither through work, and neither through mental speculation can we know Krishna, because these are ascending processes. This is something that we achieve with our own efforts. But Krishna cannot be known with our own efforts. He can only be known by devotional service. And that is why Krishna recommends to give up these processes. And in the soon we will hear about how Lord Brahma was also bewildered by Yoga Maya in Brahma Vimohana Lila, where he could not understand how can Krishna be the Supreme Person, and at the same time how can he eat some rice and yogurt in his left hand and take care of cows with his cowherd boyfriends. So he was testing Krishna by stealing these cows and cowherd boys, but Krishna again miraculously he expanded himself into all these forms and thus bewildered Lord Brahma. And then, because in the explanation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur about in Krishna Lila different personalities represent different anarthas, and then Brahma is representing this anartha of mental speculation. So he's, after being defeated, after understanding that Krishna is actually the Supreme Person, he's reciting his prayers. So in this prayer he says, 10:14:29, Atapite deva padambuja dvaya prasada leshanu grihita evahi chanati tatvam bhagavan mahimno nachanya ekopi chiram vichinvan. That says, my Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. So we are given this wonderful mission to tell people about Krishna, and also if they don't know about Krishna, or if they know, sometimes I found they just don't understand that he's the Supreme Person. Like once in Sankirtan, in my very short Sankirtan career, I was distributing books a couple of weeks in Brussels, in Belgium, and I met many people who originally are from India, but living there. Then I met one lady who, she came to me, and she was surprised. She said, what are these, I know these books, what are these books you are trying to distribute on the street? And then I showed her books, and I said, this is about Krishna, spirituality, spiritual knowledge. And then she said, of course, yes, I know about Krishna. I know about Bhagavad Gita. And she says, but actually, I have a statue, or murti, she would say statue. I have inherited from my grandmother, she said. She gave me this statue of Krishna, but I just keep it as a decoration. And I have an altar, but on my altar I have demigods, but I never thought that this statue of Krishna I would keep on my altar. And I was very much surprised, because how come I was able to get this knowledge, not coming from Indian background, and how come she was given by her grandmother Krishna Murti, and she could not appreciate it. Or another occasion also, I was chastised actually. Some Prabhu from India he saw me with the distributing books, and then he immediately started to chastise me, saying, "What is this? You are giving Bhagavad Gitas in the street and all these books. This is our knowledge, our tradition from India, but we are not. This is Europe. So why would you sell these books here? We come here from India, but we should respect this tradition here. These people, they have another religion, another tradition. So what? This is not what you should be doing." He was very angry. And also another woman I met, who was surprised that I am distributing books, and she said, No. What is this selling books on the street? This is, we don't do this. We are, if we are born in India, then we accept that this is our tradition, and we learn these things. But not that we go outside and we try to preach or convert. We are respectful to different traditions. So this is our tradition. And we keep it. Actually, she said she was Buddhist, I think, or something like that. But anyway, she was speaking from the perspective how it is not tradition to preach this Vedic knowledge. And we see, actually, it is not. Tradition is that this is a secret knowledge. It is only meant for persons who are qualified. It doesn't make any sense that if somebody is born in a different tradition, he doesn't know about Krishna, he doesn't even want to know. So why would we go there and try to think of ways to get him to know and to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Person? This would be a very difficult task. And apparently almost impossible, but this is what is our mission. This is the mission of Lord Chaitanya, and it was the mission of all of our acharyas, and it was also the mission which Srila Prabhupada took to heart very much. And even though he was discouraged all his life by leaders, by his peers, he didn't have support. He nevertheless, he took this mission as order of his spiritual master, and he went to all the trouble to go to New York and to preach and to accept disciples and then to travel and open centers so that this world would have an international society for Krishna consciousness, which has this purpose to tell people about Krishna and to tell us also about Krishna, because to understand who is Krishna is so important. So one can ask, why is it so important? Actually, maybe I don't care who is Krishna, but this is important because the purpose of spiritual life is not taking birth again and going back to Godhead. So this can only be achieved if we know who is Krishna. And I would like to read how in this Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 51, Krishna says to Arjuna, "Karmajam buddhi yukta hi bhavam tyaktva manishina janma bandha vinirmukta padam gachanti anamayam." By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries. by going back to Godhead. So that is why in Srimad Bhagavatam we hear so many stories about births and pregnancies, and it is not surprising that this is one very important subject. It would be, one could ask oneself, why would be so important for these sages if they are sitting on the banks of Ganges or they are in Naimisharanya forest, and there are no members of the general society there, so they are devoted especially to hearing and understanding these Vedas, and this is the highest, the cream of all the Vedic literature, Bhagavata Purana. It is a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So what is the need of mentioning so many pregnancies and Krishna's pregnancy? And this is why we learn that to not be born again, this is also our mission, to attain the spiritual world. And I'd like to also reverse to, actually this was mentioned recently, I have it here, in the purport of 8th verse of this chapter, the explanation by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is explaining the influence of these Leelas. And his explanation is very revolutionary, because we see in most Shastras in the world, so demons are condemned, and we hear also in Srimad Bhagavatam demons are condemned. But here he says that these personalities we hear about in this examples of the story of Krishna's birth, they are representing categories. Like, for example, Marichi is incarnation of the mind, so he is born from Lord Brahma. And then these six older brothers of Krishna, or sons of Devaki, they are Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada and Matsarya. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness and envy. So he goes further to say that Devaki symbolically represents bhakti, so it is in her womb that Krishna appears. And Kamsa symbolically represents material fear or fear of material bondage. So we hear this story with it's not obvious to us, this is explanation. We would never think about connecting this story with such symbolic concepts. But by understanding, by hearing, we can also understand that how Krishna will appear in our heart, what needs to happen for Krishna to appear in our heart. So before he appears, then all these unwanted anarthas need to be removed. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada and Matsarya. All these, our heart needs to be cleared from all these anarthas. And then, before Krishna appears, Balaram appears. And why was there a need for Balaram to appear before Krishna? So the need was there because Krishna, he never appears alone. He appears with his plenary expansions, and he also appears in a transcendental dham. And the need was for Balaram to leave a throne or a bed for Krishna. He can only so that he can appear. He can only appear if there is a place for him, and this place is a transcendental Dham. And that is why Balaram first appeared in the womb of Devaki, and then he was transferred to the womb of Rohini. This is a quote, I have a quote from this purport. When a pure devotee always fears material association, his real position of bhakti is manifested and he naturally becomes uninterested in material enjoyment. So this is again what we hear in Bhagavad Gita in the beginning, that devotees are not engaged in sense gratification. They leave behind all this bewilderment, and they devote their lives exclusively to worship of Krishna and to hearing about Krishna, because anyway, they understand that it's not by their own efforts that they appear, but they need to invite Krishna into their hearts, and then they will be able to achieve this result of going back to Godhead. Also, it's interesting how in this Leela, Balaram appears, but then he disappears. And this is compared to many occasions when devotee goes through progress or spiritual advancement, and then it seems that Krishna appeared, but then he immediately disappears. And this is what happened many times in Bhagavatam. For example, when Narada Muni, he was meditating on the Lord, and then Krishna appeared, and then he told him, "You will not see me. I will soon disappear, and then you will not see me again in this lifetime." And because of this experience of seeing Krishna and then losing Krishna, Narada Muni was so eager to look for him and to hanker for Krishna. And also we hear in Rasa Leela that the gopis, Krishna was lost, and then he appeared, he seemed to appear, and then he disappeared again. And by this appearing and disappearing, the hankering for Krishna was intensified. And also we know in the example of Goswamis in Vrindavan, they were in this mood of they were not saying, "I know Krishna, I understand him," but they were saying, "Where is Krishna? I am looking for him, but I cannot find him. Is he behind this tree, or is he in Yamuna, or is he bathing in a lake?" They were their mood was the mood of separation and the mood of looking for him and hankering for Krishna, and this is what is attracting Krishna to reveal himself. So the symbolical representations explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur were then later developed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his works Krishna Samhita and Chaitanya Shikshamrita, where he goes further to explain that every demon represents one of the anarthas. And then there is also the explanation that what is the so we go through all this clearing of anarthas, but before the last anartha is removed, they're removed from being gross anarthas to being more subtle anarthas. And to answer the question, what is the most subtle anartha that gets removed last? He gives explanation that this last anartha is false identification, because while as long as we tend to have false identifications, we will not be able to achieve spiritual realization, or Krishna will not reveal himself to us. And so this gross materialist, they have many identifications, and they say, I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm a rich person, I'm a businessman, I'm a grandparent, I own a house, I own a car, I have so many things. And they are attached to their possessions and their identifications. But once a devotee tries to make spiritual progress, then he may give up those gross identifications, but he may still keep some more subtle identifications, like he would think, I'm such a great devotee, or I'm actually a saint. And he may be a great devotee, and he may be a saint also, but as long as he keeps these identities in his mind, this is the condition that Krishna will have to give up for Krishna to appear. And our only identification should be that we are servant of Krishna, and that is how we can achieve this big mission of not taking birth again. So I would like to stop here and see if there are any comments or questions. Yes.
Thank you for class, and thank you for your Sankirtan, brief Sankirtan experiences, which you should expand upon. Speaking of your Sankirtan experiences, you were mentioning how you were speaking to somebody and they were saying, this is my culture, I know all these things. I don't think people growing up in India realize just how far out Krishna is to a Western person. Uh-huh. Right? I mean, it's amazing. And like you, my first book was Krishna book. And I was like, that's a real test right there. Are you going to say this is just crazy stories, or are you like, this is amazing, this is God? So my question is, how is it that some people, especially in the West, when given this opportunity to know Krishna, blow it off, where others take to it? Mm-hmm. Because those of us who take to it, are we just really advanced devotees in hiding and now we're coming out? How is it that some, like the ones everyone's sitting here, can take the Krishna consciousness, can accept Krishna as God, where the majority of people say, you know, this is just fairy tales, this is stories?
Okay, thank you for your question. I would say for anything about in relation to Krishna or to devotional service or the process of becoming a devotee, that it's very mystical, and there are no recipes and no formulas. And we can see when Srila Prabhupada, he was traveling all over the world, but he did not distinguish who to preach. He would preach to anybody. He would preach to leaders, but he would also preach to people who are ordinary people. And as I understand, actually he was surprised that when he went to America, USA, that he would expect that this knowledge would be received by noble people, upper levels of society, people who are established or somehow they have good karma. But this is not what happened. He was actually mostly, his disciples were hippies, were coming from this hippie background, and they were young people, they were in their early 20s, and it was because they rejected material society, and they were looking for alternative. So I think this is the best situation for most people, that there must be some frustration of material happiness, because they had everything, they had good opportunities, but they just were not interested, they didn't want even to work, as I understand most of them, they were not even working, they were just hanging in parks. So, and then when this opportunity was presented to them, then they picked it up because they were able to appreciate it. And today we don't have hippie movement, at least not like in the 60s. But most people who become serious devotees, we can notice that they have already gone through this frustration of material happiness. They say, I have everything, or I can have everything, but this is not what I want. I want something else. And then this is such a great fortune for us. Great fortune. I mean, incredible fortune, because this knowledge is a secret, and we can see even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he was telling his disciples, you preach, you go to West, you extend this knowledge, this is our mission, we are movement of Lord Chaitanya, we are not just meant to be one of the sects in India, we are meant to overflood with the whole world with Krishna Prema. So because of this tradition that it is a big secret meant only for qualified people, that there was some hesitancy, and we are greatly fortunate that there are preachers in this world that can introduce Krishna consciousness to people like us. Okay. Anything else? Okay.
Even great devotees, they perform many penances, austerities, devotional service for Krishna, to have Krishna as their son. But the life seemed, from the story makes it sound like the reward wasn't very blissful. Like they had all their children killed up until they had a miscarriage, which isn't very much fun. And then the Krishna finally appears and then immediately leaves.
He leaves.
And they're left in the prison for years while Krishna's in Vrindavan. I'm not sure if they ever really get Krishna as their son, because by the next time they see him, he's all grown up.
Yeah.
He's on his way moving to Dwarka.
Yeah.
So how could they be happy with all that misery?
That is the qualification of surrender, is that they were performing austerities to have Krishna as their son. They did 10,000 years austerities because it was their desire. And this is how it happens that devotee surrenders and then he accepts any condition coming from Krishna. And it is explained from what I heard that it was their choice. They chose this. This is what it means to be qualified to be Krishna's parent in this world. That no matter how the situation comes out, that they are still happy, so much happy to have Krishna as their son, that they don't mind any material consideration. And it was not a suffering for them in that sense, because this was their desire. So if it's not when surrender happens, it's not under our condition, it's under Krishna's condition. So whatever he's asking of us, we accept. So he was asking Devaki, Vasudeva, so this is my lila, this is how I want to appear, and would you like to participate in my lila? You will have to apparently materialist, you will have to go through all the suffering, you will not see me, but do you accept? And they said, yes, of course, no problem for us, we just want to have you as a son. This is how I understand that it was their desire to please him. So this devotees, we accept any whatever is coming for Krishna for as his pleasure, we accept. Okay. Grant Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.